Welcome everyone to episode 6 of the Instructional Leadership Show. I'm your host, Justin Bader, and our focus in this episode is on turning school improvement aspirations into specific goals. Now, our focus more broadly in the Instructional Leadership Show is on three things. The Instructional Leadership Show exists to help you confidently get into classrooms every day, have feedback conversations that change teacher practice, and discover your best opportunities for school improvement. And as you may have noticed, we have a challenge going on right now called the School Improvement Challenge. So we're focused on this third priority here, discovering our best opportunities for school improvement. And it's been so much fun to hear from you, to ask, to discuss with you what your aspirations are, what your goals are for school improvement. So I thought we would zoom in on that topic today, specifically around those aspirations that may be a little bit on the pie in the sky side, a little bit on the vague side, a little bit on the big picture side. And I think we've been pressured and we've been enculturated to avoid those kind of big picture dreams or aspirations or goals in our profession. I think we've been trained to push for things that are measurable, to push for things that are concrete and specific, often to the detriment of students. So SMART goals, right? We're supposed to have SMART goals for almost everything. And if you've ever set a SMART goal, you've probably felt this feeling, this reaction that by making it into something measurable, we're kind of squeezing the heart out of it, right? We're kind of squeezing the essence out of what we're really going for in order to make it something that is clearly measurable. And I think that is an inevitable tendency, but not something that we can't work around. So I'm going to share my workaround for that pitfall of SMART goals with you. But I think we've got to start by acknowledging that aspirations are good. It is good to have hopes and dreams for your students. It is good for you to want things to happen in your school, even if they're not fully defined, even if you don't know exactly what you're looking for or exactly what it would look like or how to measure it, that is okay. It is okay to want these big picture things. And I'm going to read some of them that people sent in on our School Improvement Challenge discussion. One person said, I want to improve climate and culture by stressing empathy. Increased student engagement in middle school. We're working on meaningful technology integration. Improve morale school-wide. Our district focus is on SEL, social and emotional learning, and understanding what that means in relation to instruction and relationships. Working on infusing innovation in all of our classes. We want to increase student agency and taking control of their own learning. Now, I'm sure there is someone out there who has put together a scale or an instrument or a rubric or a self-assessment for student agency and innovation and engagement. I'm sure we could measure all of those things, but here's what I do not want you to do. I do not want you to take that scale, whatever quantitative form of measurement you've come up with or come across online, and give that to your staff as the vision, right? Like, we can all recognize that presenting the means of measurement as the vision is not the right way to inspire people. Right, is not the right way to get people to take action. If we want people to take action, we don't start with the measurement. We start with the dream. And I'm probably not going to say his name correctly, but the author, I believe the author of the Little Prince, Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, I'm sorry, my French is not great, said something along the lines of, if you want people to go on a dangerous voyage with you. If you want, I should have looked up the quote here, but if you want people to set sail on a dangerous journey, don't just tell them about sailing. Don't just tell them about knots and ships. Teach them, this is the part that I know is an actual quote here, so somebody will have to look this up for me. Teach them to long for the endless immensity of the sea. That is how you inspire people to go on a journey. And as I looked at these aspirations that people had for school improvement, I thought these are the kinds of things that will inspire people. This is the longing for the immensity of the sea, right? This is where people want to go. These are inherently good things. But how we get there, of course, requires us to do some other thinking. And often when we have a goal along the lines of, I want to see more of X, I want to see more empathy, I want to see more innovation, I want to see more student ownership, I want to see better morale, I want to see more student engagement. Often we don't quite know what we mean by that. We couldn't operationally define it, but we know it when we see it. So if you're struggling to turn your aspirations into a more concrete plan, one place I want to encourage you to look is at the people that you already work with, that you already admire, who are doing great work in this area. So rather than start with a SMART goal and a strategic plan and a rollout plan and a timeline and accountability and a walkthrough feedback form where you tell people if they are implementing with fidelity, rather than starting with all of that, I want to encourage you to start with something much simpler. The question of who. Who is already doing this? Who is already fulfilling that aspiration that you have? And if it's nobody, if you can't think of a single person who's doing the thing that you have in mind well, you might need to go looking, because it's critical, I believe, in any improvement effort to have actual examples, to have concrete examples of people who are doing what you envision, so that it's not imaginary. It's, even if you are pretty sure it's real, people are not going to fully believe that it's a real thing unless they have seen it. So a lot of schools that are trying to do innovative things will take site visits. You know, they'll go on a trip, they'll travel to another school, they'll observe, they'll talk with the educators in that school, and they'll see what it's actually like. But I'm going to guess that that's not necessary for the improvement aspirations that you have. I'm going to guess that you have people in your school who are already doing what you want. And if you could bottle that and manufacture it and sell it and get everybody else in your school on board with it, then you'd be in great shape. But translating what some people are doing into what you want everybody to do is often pretty tough. But I think the starting point is still who. Who do we start with for this particular initiative? You probably have people in your school. And what I want to encourage you to do is actually start to articulate for yourself, who are the people on my staff who are already doing this well? Who are the people who are interested in doing this well? Maybe need some training first, but I think they'll get there. Who are the people who easily could do it but just don't want to? You know, figuring out where different people are, I think, is really critical for figuring out who should go first and who should go next. And I've provided a tool for you in the School Improvement Challenge called the Will and Skill Grid. And it's a very simple XY grid. You can see it on the screen there. It's just a simple two-axis graph. And I've got will on the horizontal axis and skill on the vertical axis. And for any particular change, this is very initiative specific. Like, let's say we're talking about infusing innovation, which, again, pretty vague, but we'll get there. We'll get more specific. If I'm thinking about infusing innovation across my middle school, I probably have a few people in mind who are already very innovative, and I would plot them on this grid as very high on both will and skill. I might have other people who are all about innovation, but just not very good at it. Maybe I have a first-year teacher who really kind of struggled this year, but is very innovative-minded and wants to get there. They just have a lot of work to do on the skill side. So maybe they're low on skill, but they're pretty far to the right on the will axis. They have the will, and the skill can come in time. But we've got to kind of figure out where people are. What you want to do is list your staff, or just print off an existing staff roster and number people, and then write the numbers on the grid. And we've provided a PDF template. You can just print this out and list your staff and kind of write the numbers for people. And what you may want to do is actually color code this by team. So if you have the math department in red, you can see where are the red numbers being written on this grid. If I think about, okay, Mr. Jones and Mrs. Jackson, and, you know, I've got everybody plotted on here, and I see these red numbers scattered in different parts of the grid, you can assess very quickly and very intuitively, where is my math department in terms of infusing innovation? So do that for your whole staff, color code by team, and see where people are, and you will have a sense of who to start with and who to look to for specific ideas about what that improvement effort looks like. In the case of our example here, what innovation looks like. So if I have someone who I think is innovative, I should probably plot them pretty high on will and skill for innovation, and I should go to their classroom and see what I like about it. What, you know, when I think of that person as a person who is innovative, what do I mean by that? What is that? How does that show up in their instruction? So when we start with who, we can focus our attention on the bright spots, what the Heath brothers call the bright spots, and articulate to ourselves and to our staff what that practice looks like. Because here's the problem with all of these aspirations, right? Improving climate, meaningful technology integration, student engagement. Those are all great things, and probably everyone will agree that those are great things, but nobody knows whether they're talking about the same thing. We can all use those words and mean completely different things. So we've got to start with the people that we already have in mind as doing these things and improving in those areas. And then we've got to start to get more specific. And the framework that I want to share with you for getting more specific is called the Achievement Science Goal System. And there are four types of goals in that system. If you are a member of the Instructional Leadership Association, in last week's episode, episode 5, we talked about these four types of goals and how they fit together. But briefly, they are purpose, phase, progress, and practice. Practice levels are the lowest level, the most doable, the most short term. They're where the rubber meets the road. They're what educators are actually doing. And purpose goals are the highest, kind of head in the clouds, mission, vision, aspiration, our dreams for our students, what we ultimately want and what we ultimately care about. And then in the middle, we have phase and progress goals. Now, I think it's critical to recognize that often in our profession, we only recognize progress goals. We only set progress goals in way too many cases. I see so many district strategic planning and school improvement planning and teacher annual goal setting processes that require SMART goals, that progress monitoring type of goal, where there's a before and an after and a score and a measurement and it's all quantitative. We require that, but often we don't think about the other kinds of goals, so we don't know how to actually achieve that goal. And on the slide here, I've got a column for whether that type of goal is doable or not. And it's my belief, I mean, you can challenge me on this if you want, I'd love to hear some examples that you might have in mind. It is my belief that SMART goals are not really directly doable. I don't know of any way to directly achieve a SMART goal. We have to do other things to achieve our SMART goals, right? You can implement a new curriculum and that might raise your test scores, but raising test scores is not something that you can directly do. So I hope this model is helpful. And in the School Improvement Challenge, what we've done is create a worksheet for you to print out. You can download that at principalcenter.com/SIC and you'll be taken to the School Improvement Challenge page, and you should find that worksheet on that page, or I've got the URL on the screen as well, directly to the PDF. And you may not be able to set all four kinds of goals, but what I want you to do with this document is figure out what kind of goal you're working with as a starting point. And the examples that I've chosen today are all purpose goals. These are things we ultimately want to see in our schools, things that are inherently good in and of themselves, things like student engagement. Well, I don't have to justify student engagement based on some higher purpose, right? I don't have to justify student engagement because research says it increases our graduation rate if we have higher student engagement. Like, well, no, yes, a higher graduation rate will be a great outcome or a great side effect of having higher student engagement, but having higher student engagement is worthy in and of itself. It's what we ultimately want for our students. We want them to experience high levels of engagement in their learning. It's not the only thing we care about, but it is something that we do ultimately care about. So figure out what kind of goal that you have. Use that worksheet. Figure out, is this goal a purpose goal, a phase goal, a progress goal, or a practice goal? And then you can look at back at your will and skill grid and say, okay, who do we have who is already embodying this? What are some of the other goals that they are working toward? And you can start to flesh out that plan a little bit more. What I want to encourage you not to do is look at that will and skill grid and take a deficiency approach and say, okay, who are my least cooperative, worst, least innovative, least engaging teachers, and how can I move them? I want to encourage you not to start with that approach, because what you're going to find is that changing the culture in your school, changing practice in your school, changing the way your teachers approach things requires momentum. It is tough work, and if you want to get everybody rowing in the same direction, you've got to build some momentum. You've got to get people working toward a common vision, And objects in motion tend to remain in motion. Objects at rest tend to remain at rest. So if you have people who are already on fire, who are already firing on all cylinders and moving in the right direction, start with them and build on that momentum. A couple of words of caution about setting these four kinds of goals and using them. When it comes to putting your aspirations into practice, putting your dreams into reality. The first word of caution that I have for you, this is based on a Peter Drucker quote, or a lot of people have said, Tom Peters has said things like this, that what gets measured gets done. And what gets measured gets done, or gets monitored, or gets managed, or gets improved, or whatever. That statement is usually used to explain why we're setting SMART goals, why we're setting quantitative goals. I think that's only true if we're talking about something that can actually be done. For example, if our goal is to improve student test scores, again, that's probably not our highest goal, but it may be a progress monitoring goal. We can't actually directly raise test scores because they're the result of something else that we do, some sort of practice that we actually do. So I just want you to keep that in mind, that SMART goals are an important kind of goal, but they're not the only kind of goal. And our most important goals, our mission, our vision, our values, our aspirations, typically do not lend themselves very well to that SMART goal format. So if you're struggling to turn innovation into a SMART goal, you might want to put that off a little bit and say, you know what, maybe we'll come up with something to measure down the road. But innovation is what we really care about, and we don't want to squash that. We don't want to crush the thing that we actually care about simply by trying to measure it. So kick that can down the road a bit, and you will discover if there is something that you want to measure. Another caution, SMART goals keep us honest about our results, but they can also distract us from what we truly care about. And then finally, start with who and figure out what you want them to do. And you should have people in your school already who are doing whatever it is that you envision. So we've been a little bit big picture today, but we tried to kind of nail down the some of the elements of your big picture vision for improvement in your school. And if you've not been following along, I want to invite you to join us for the full video series that we've got going on right now. You can find it on our website at principalcenter.com/SIC. And if you are an Instructional Leadership Association member watching this later, we'll put the full video series in our members area so that you have on-demand access. The School Improvement Challenge is all about helping you identify those aspirations and turn them into reality. It's something that does not happen automatically, right? Typing up a Word document that says strategic plan at the top does not automatically produce results. We know there is an enormous amount of human work that needs to happen. We have to marshal people to make change together, to figure out what that change looks like, to work through the challenges. And that is why we're doing the School Improvement Challenge. So that video series is available now at principalcenter.com/SIC. A couple of other things I wanted to bring to your attention. If the goal that you are working toward is around a specific instructional strategy, you may want to develop a rubric for it. And we have a program called the Instructional Framework Development Program that will help you think through the components of that practice, that instructional strategy, that instructional practice, you know, whatever element of teaching and learning you are striving to get more specific about and to get more consistent about as a school. We've got a program that will help you guide your staff through articulating a rubric for that practice so that you know what you're looking for, teachers know what you're looking for, everybody's on the same page, and you have a common vocabulary for talking about that practice. Now, having said that, not all improvement efforts are around specific instructional strategies. And, you know, typically the things that we're doing as a whole school are not specific instructional strategies. They're bigger. Maybe they're about social and emotional learning. Maybe they're about climate. Maybe they are about something that is more teaching related, like standards-based grading or project-based learning, or, you know, whatever is on deck for you. And that is the focus of our all-new version 2.0 forthcoming Organizational Learning Intensive. So coming in the month of June, you will find information about the Organizational Learning Intensive, and I will walk you through all of the tools that we talked about here today and the entire process of turning an aspiration into an actual improvement and generating organizational learning so that improvement can be sustained. So that is it for today. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Instructional Leadership Show. I'm your host, Justin Bader. This is a member benefit of the Instructional Leadership Association. So all past episodes and future episodes will be available on demand to our members. In the members area, we provide a MP3 version. We provide the slides as well as the video. And if you are not a member, you can watch free here on Facebook every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Now, again, we are taking next week off, but the Wednesdays that I'm here and can do the show, we do that at 11 a.m. Central. And you're welcome to tune in. We'd love to have your comments. And if you're watching the replay, if you're tuning in at a different time, Facebook does allow you to do that and allows you to comment. And I love reading your comments as you're watching that replay. So thanks so much for being here. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for your comments, and I'll see you next time.